Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello there, friends. Happy Tuesday and happy Election Day. Yes, today is Election Day. If you've forgotten, there's still time to vote. I don't know if you voted. I voted, but if you haven't voted, you should vote. If you did vote, then thank you so much for participating in our democracy. It is so very important. And I can tell you that I actually just got back in town late last night, returning from Washington, D.C., where I walked a lot of steps yesterday, trudging across Capitol Hill, meeting with both of the Texas senators and with several of our representatives to give my perspective as a pediatric nurse and expert and how the law and policy can best serve our kids today. And it's so important to know that the Capitol is the people's house. It is our house. And it truly is like that when you walk in, to know that the representatives are representing us and they do listen to what you say. And so taking the time to write in, to talk about an issue that's important to you, giving your perspective as a parent or whatever job you do, those things are so important. And I'll share with you maybe what might be considered a kind of insider tip is that many of those offices, they actually keep tallies of how many people are calling in about what issues. And then the staffers give those responses to their either congressman or woman. They give it to their senator and they say, here is the pulse of the district. Here is what the district cares about. So your call, your letter, it really does matter. And today, later on in the show, we're going to talk about how to effectively engage our kids in civic action, because I'll tell you, I teach policy at a university to graduate students, and I poll them before they come in. And the number one word that they use to describe their feelings about coming into this course is dread. I dread this course, is what they say. But the number one word that they use when they leave the course is empowered. I feel empowered to make a difference, and that is really important. So we can have civil conversation in a very uncivil world while sticking true to our values and what we believe in. And I have such a great show lined up for you today. Do not go away, because we have an amazing guest for you and someone who has lived those values out her entire life, everything that I was talking about. So we know that Veterans Day is coming up, and you may not know, but Nurse Practitioner Week is next week. So as a special preview, I have both a nurse practitioner and a veteran for you on the show who has an incredible story, just not only of her own personal career, but an act of heroism by her husband and a friendship that she has had with the founder and creator of the nurse practitioner profession. So we have a lot of interesting things to talk about. So my guest today, without further ado, is Jean Artker. She is a longtime resident of Tampa, Florida, and she has a career spanning 50 years as a registered nurse and 40 years as a family nurse practitioner. She started in the nursing profession in a rural hospital in South New Jersey in 1973, and she joined the United States Air Force Nurse Corps during the Vietnam era in 1974. And it was really there in the military that she was introduced to the role of nurse practitioners. And then following some events that we are about to talk about, she started her career in nursing. I will tell you now, she is a Gold Star wife and a Gold Star family member. And without further ado, again, Jean, I just want to welcome you to the program. Thank you so much for joining the Dr. Nurse Mama Show.
It's my honor to be here, Jessica. Thank you.
Well, welcome. Well, you have such an amazing story to tell. And again, like I said, this is Veterans Day. It's Nurse Practitioner Week. And in August of 1977, You and your new husband were both in the Air Force. You were a newlywed. You were a flight nurse when you suddenly and became a widow with a two-week-old newborn baby. And all you were told at that time was that a tragic accident had occurred and that your husband's co-pilot had reportedly had a heart attack while flying and your husband's plane crashed in a field in Germany. But that was not even close to the end of the story. So I want to go back and start at the beginning of the story for our listeners. Tell us about Alan and how you met and got married.
Love to. I met Alan Frederick Erker in September of 1974 when I first reported to my duty station at England Air Force Base, Alexandria, Louisiana. Everyone that goes into the Air Force as a nurse officer usually will go to some kind of basic orientation, and I did that in Wichita Falls, Texas, at Shepherd Air Force Base. Thereupon, you have your military training, which is about 4 weeks long at that time, and I was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the Nurse Corps. I was thrilled. I was excited. It was my dream come true to be able to go into the Air Force. You know, when they recruit you in the Air Force, they say, we'll give you the dream sheet, which is, where's your choice of locations to be? And it wasn't by the base, it was by the region. So I picked everything that was in the south where it was warm, because I was very tired of New Jersey winters. So they sent me to Wichita Falls for training and assigned me to England Air Force Base, Alexandria, Louisiana, and that's where we met. I was assigned to the bachelor's officer's quarters rather than living off base, because I thought it was better to get to learn the people on the base and learn the protocols around there. I could walk to work to the small little hospital that we had, and it was quite a good duty for a young nurse learning, because I had a lot of senior nurse officers there to train me. Well, one day my roommate, who was a pediatric nurse practitioner, came by and said, here, I'm going to take you around and meet so you can meet everyone in the BOQ. And there was my Alan, who was standing out painting a bookcase on the back of the BOQ patio, and he was playing some country western music. At that time, I had no idea what country western music was. So I said, what is that hillbilly music? And I got reprimanded real quick by him. Ma'am, that's country western. And that's what you get when you talk to a Texas Aggie who's a diehard Texan who loves his country western music. Well, you hear the stories about love at first sight. That was it. When I saw Alan, he was just remarkable. Witty, kind, helped everybody. He was just one of those great, good-looking, tall guys that looked great in a uniform. And so we started dating thereafter, a couple weeks later, but I knew this was the guy. So I enjoyed my duty with Eric, and we decided that after a while we'd get married. So we were engaged every year. And then we decided that let's get married at the end of my term and move with his career, and I would join the reserves, Air Force Reserves. But that didn't happen.
Jean, you are just making me smile. Your love for Alan, even after all of these years, is just a precious, precious thing. And I cannot imagine how hard it must have been to hear what happened to him, because here you are, a newlywed, deeply in love, a baby on the way, just imagining a completely different future than what happened. And again, I just can't imagine the shock and the grief that you must have felt. And so tell us about that time, how you learned the tragic news of Alan's death, and how that led to your journey as a nurse and a nurse practitioner.
Sure. I'd love to. Well, as I said, the duty was great in Louisiana. And while I was a nurse at Air Force Base, England Air Force Base, I got deployed to a tent city, Ed, that was put up at Eglin Air Force Base to bring all the Vietnamese relocation refugees to America. And we processed over 10,000 refugees in a MASH type unit. And I learned a lot about public health. I learned a lot about infectious disease, and I learned a lot about international cultures, and that you can't serve them typical military food, because that's not what they eat. So that was an enlightenment there. And during that time I was down there, I guess separation makes the heart grow fonder, because he came down to visit me, and that's when we got engaged. From there, I went back, and I was assigned to go to flight school. So I went to flight school and said, boy, I'm going to go fly. And sure enough, I got orders to fly through the Philippines. But then he also got orders to go to navigation school at Mather Air Force Base. So we decided that if we're going to stay together and this marriage was going to come together, that one of us had to change the plan. So I did not take the assignment to be a flight nurse, and he went off to go to school. So towards the end of the school, we decided to get married, and we married. And it's important to know that the date was September 4th, 1976. That day that the tragedy happened was August 25th, 1977, not even a year before our first anniversary. We were all settled in base housing when we got to England. The pregnancy went great. We had a child that was born at the neighboring base about an hour away. It's kind of funny when you have hospitals all around America and you think, oh, no big problem. But when we left our tiny base of Alconbury to go to the Lake and Heath larger hospital for delivery, flight surgeon gave us a map with distinctions of where midwives were located all the way along the journey to get there an hour later in case we went into preterm labor. So that was kind of interesting and kind of scary for a first time. Well, we got to Lake and Heath, and we delivered a beautiful 7-pound, 6-ounce daughter named Catherine Jane Oetker, and she goes by Kate. So Al was there for the delivery, and he was there for the first 2 weeks of his life. And then that morning on August 25th at like 4 o'clock in the morning, the recall alarms went off. For anyone military, they know that means get into your duty station and report for duty. You don't know if it's real or if it's going to be a simulation or whatever. Well, in the military, they used to have a little give for the new fathers and new relocations. His squadron had been half deployed to Holland that week, and he had gone in and said, I'll be back by noon. I probably will get desk duty because, you know, we have the new baby. So I didn't expect him to be flying then. And unknown to me, he could not give us a call because it was recall. I had a friend who was another wife come over, and we were sitting in my home, miring the baby. And all of a sudden, if you're in base housing, sometimes they can pull spot inspections on you. And I thought, what are all these military staff cars doing pulling up at my house? And then I looked out, and I saw the general, and I saw a couple others. And I thought, this is odd. And then I saw my priest. And I knew that it was not going to be good. So entered the delegation to come in and tell me that their plane had gone down over Germany and they did not expect any survivors. Well, that's what happened. So that's how I got to learn about his death. I didn't know he was flying. He was planning to come back. And before noon, I had learned that he was killed.
Oh, my goodness.
I did the most thing I could do is get his parents on the phone. And I knew his mother would be home alone. She raised 6 children, a devout Catholic family like we are. And I asked them to go and get my father-in-law from his employer, General Dynamics. Al's dad was an aircraft engineer, and he designed the F-16 fuselage. So he was busy at work at General Dynamics, and the military went to him, and then part of our faith, he decided that he would go get Monsignor Wolf from our church in Fort Worth and brought him home to tell his mom. And so I thought, that's a good sign of faith that we did it, that Dad decided to do it that way for Alan.
That's so true, Jean. I cannot imagine that moment, but listeners, don't go away, because this is very far from the end of the story. And 20 years later, a German school teacher called Jean and changed her life forever with incredible news. We'll talk about that in the next segment.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, friends. It is Tuesday, Election Day. We are approaching Veterans Day. We are approaching Nurse Practitioner Week. And if you were listening before, you were listening to my friend and colleague, Jean Artker, who is a nurse practitioner and an Air Force veteran and a Gold Star widow, who was telling us the story of meeting her husband, Alan Artker, and about his tragic death in a plane crash over Germany. Now, this might seem like an incredible story, and to hear Jean's faith through all of this, seeing her priest come in that moment and how she and her family clung to their faith in that moment of tragedy, it is not even the beginning of the end of the story. Now, when this happened, 20 years later, a German school teacher named Jochen Eickhoff, he came to Tween. That is the town in Germany where this crash happened. And Jean, he changed your life forever with some incredible news. Now, this school teacher was a hobbyist, really, and he explored old war sites, and he had heard about Alan's crash. And so he started to look into this, and his discovery started his own personal quest to compel the military to honor Alan as a hero. So, Jean, tell us about that letter you got with the news of what had happened, followed by an invitation for the adventure of a lifetime.
Indeed, it was. On the 14th of October, 1997, 20 years, 2 months later after Al's death, for many of these years, I got the accident report because I insisted that I want to find out what happened. Ironically, they were both 25 years old at the time and both in good condition, healthy, good, strapping guys. Matter of fact, the pilot, Ken Cedar, was applying for astronaut school, and he actually lived close by my parents' home in New Jersey, and my mother knew his family. How ironic. I had met him when we first got to England at Alconbury Air Force Base. So Al was fit and very healthy. He had been transferred from Sumter Air Force Base to Alconbury, and he joined the 1st TRS Squadron. These two had never flown together because half the squadron was gone. So when they came and told me that there was a crash, I was in disbelief because he wasn't supposed to be flying. But then I got the accident report, and they said that the cause of the accident, that was the pilot had been incapacitated, that he had, at age 25, 90% occlusion of his left main coronary. I find that hard to believe, but I know that this can happen. We all do as nurse practitioners. But they indicated that Alan was trying to fly the plane and missed the coming into this little town of Thun, Germany, which is the mother house of the Franciscan Catholic Order, and flew almost wheels down. If they would, or down, they would be touching. But he pulled the plane up and flipped it over into an empty field away from all the population. So for that, when the townspeople were talking to Joachim Eickhoff, the school teacher, whose hobby was to find relics and artifacts from World War II missing soldiers, both German, you know, and American and any other allies. So he had come to this town and was excavating the field and other areas because of World War II. But he came to the town little pub, and they were talking, and he decided that he was going to build a monument for them because all the farmers praised the crew for saving their town. They would have been demolished. It's a small little farming town, beautiful city, beautiful little town. So he was able to find a big boulder, transport it there with a crew of the townspeople, and they erected this boulder at a site because the nuns coming every day since the accident would stop by there, stop and pray. And as they got older, they put a bench there for the nuns. And then they made a little park there, and they dedicated it to both my husband and the pilot, Ken Cedar. So we have a plaque on a big boulder that was transported there, and now a little garden. And the farmer who owns the property donated it to the Catholic convent there to keep it forever for to remember these two soldiers that saved their town. And that's something I found in this letter dated 1997 from Colonel Kosick, who said that on the 20th anniversary, they celebrated it by dedicating this memorial stone, and the whole town came out. And they recognized the sacrifices that these two fellows did in order to save their town. Herr Eickhoff continued that tradition every year for the next 15 years. And then the town decided that they would just do the memorials every 10 years now. But they're going to keep the memorial stone as a park there in this little town of Tuna. And what Herr Eickhoff told me was that he investigated lots of aircraft accidents over the years in his real civilian job, and he felt that what they did was very heroic. Now, the plane fell into an empty field with crops, and it just missed the family that was living in the farmhouse there. And the Air Force came in like they do, and they pick up all the pieces of the airplane and take it away quickly. It's top secret, and they had to revitalize the area. So the farmer was told if he found anything from the crash to report it. Well, another 10 years later, I went back to the town, and the farmer came up to me with his wife and handed me a piece of the plane, about a 16 by 14 piece of triangle of the plane, you know, the green Air Force jet plane color. And stenciled on there are some letters. And at that session that we went back to have a memorial service, the navigator in the first plane went with me, and he said to me, you know, Gene, I think Alan is talking to you here, because this piece of the plane that you can see here with these letters is stenciled on one particular spot of the plane. And of all pieces for them to find after the Air Force picked up everything was this piece of the plane that sat next to my husband's cockpit. And it says, if it was intact, who here to engage canopy? And that was just truly amazing to me. And I have a piece of my husband's plane that where he sat. So that's amazing, the connectivities that happened, because we also learned that all of his great ancestry came from this area of Germany in a little town called Aspevern. So when I went back in 1998, the military put on were invited, and the town put on a big memorial service for both families, and we got to meet all the townspeople, and I got to stay in the convent that night with my twin sister because they didn't have any hotels. So it was quite interesting to go back and hear the stories of all the farmers telling how they saw the plane come down and pull away from the hospital, the convent, and the school just in time to flip it upside down in a field. It was miraculous that they could do that. And they said my husband's injuries were consistent with him at the stick. So I guess we have to be proud that they did something to save the town, that there was intent to move away from tragedy. And I think that God was steering that plane at that time to help them from destroying a small little beautiful village that it surely would have done.
I cannot agree more, Jean. That is amazing. And so if you're just joining us, to recap, this is incredible. So Alan is flying the plane with his co-pilot. His co-pilot, young and 25, has a massive heart attack. Alan takes over the stick and is flying the plane and sees he has a choice. He can fly into the town, destroying a convent, an orphanage, homes, and he heroically flips the plane over into a field. And Jean, I've been in your house. I've seen that piece of plane. And to know that your husband touched that very handle and made a decision in that moment, do I save myself or do I save this town? And knowing the sacrifice that he made, I cannot even get over the story. Go on with whatever else you're going to say. I am just completely enraptured.
On the 20th anniversary, which we missed, we went back in 1998. So it was, you know, a little bit of time the next year. And the townspeople have been so truly great to us. In the town that day, they had a memorial service in the Catholic cathedral there. And that is a reclusive order there that they usually don't open up the church to outsiders. They have another Catholic church in town for that. But they opened it up special for us, and they had a beautiful, beautiful mass. My cousins who I met, Heinrich and Maria Erker and their daughter Miriam, who's visited me many times now since, sang at the memorial service. And our cousin Heinrich was formerly a priest and left the priesthood to be a teacher. And he helped them to produce the program for us. And later on, one of their nieces was a nun in this little town. So the connectivity is close. Alan's grandfather, I told you we were stationed in England Air Force Base, Alexandria, Louisiana. In 1863, when most of the German boys were leaving the country because they would be inducted into the World War I, his grandfather left and came to, of all places, Alexandria, Louisiana, to set up his farm. So the Erkers' permanent residence, when they first came to America, was Alexandria, Louisiana. And there's many Erkers still in Alexandria, Louisiana, and then throughout Louisiana. Alan's parents had moved to Texas because of the General Dynamics job. So that connectivity just kept coming around and around with family members that had connections to this German little village, and meeting all the Erker family over the years. It's been amazing.
That's really special, Jean. And Texas A&M chose to honor Captain Erker. So for those of you who are Aggies out there, you know about the Corps, and Alan was in the Corps. And tell us about the experience of Texas A&M honoring his legacy and his sacrifice.
Right. Well, Alan was in the Corps staff. He was Lieutenant Commander, Operations Commander. And all his Aggie buddies, many of them have actually traveled to Tuna to be at the site and just say, stop and say prayers at the memorial site and visit the little village and go to the little pub. And they tell me that every once in a while, the farmer from Tuna will write and say, we see more American flags out there this time. And they let the flags stay up and memorialize. There's a lot of Texas flags that get placed at the memorial stone for Alan and American flag for Ken. It's quite interesting. But many of the Aggies go back. I took one of his Aggie buddies from Squadron 7, which is no longer at A&M, but, and he took and put an Aggie flag up there for Alan. My daughter also, when she was deciding on schools, she was a National Merit Scholar, Catherine. Kate had a plaque made, and they put that on the memorial stone with the Texas A&M crest, and that's important. The other thing she did was that she donated her father's class ring, 1974, to the Saunders Museum at A&M. So if you ever go into the museum, you'll see Alan Erker's, Captain Alan Erker's ring there.
Well, I know we have people listening who are in College Station or visit College Station to go see the Fightin' Texas Aggie Band. I may be saying it wrong. I apologize profusely to Aggies out there if I said that wrong, but I know that the band is famous, and I know that you will just love knowing the story that's behind that. And you're right, Jean, that Alan's legacy lives on through your daughter, Kate. So what would you like to say about Kate? Because she followed in your footsteps, didn't she?
Catherine was a National Merit Scholar, and when she graduated Texas A&M, she told me she wanted to be a lawyer. And I said, okay. Not going into nursing, we knew that. But she wanted to be a lawyer, and she said she was selecting her school, and she wanted to go to Notre Dame. And I said, why would you want to go to Notre Dame? It's cold. We're in the South. Why do you think it's South? She decided to go to Notre Dame. She said, because I want to be an ethical lawyer. And I said, oh, okay, and a Catholic lawyer. So that's why she went to Notre Dame. And she's fell in love with her love at Notre Dame, and they're married, and they have given me 4 grandchildren. They're in Massachusetts now, and she still likes the cold.
Oh my goodness. But, you know, she is so brave, and it's amazing to see, you know, just Alan's legacy living on through both of you. And you've said that you wanted the world to know about Alan's brave sacrifice so that others can live. And today we are so grateful to know about the valiant and heroic Captain Alan Artker. Now, you are a healthcare hero of your own sort, to be sure. Now, as a preview of what we'll talk about next, about your journey after Alan's death as a nurse practitioner, you have a long time friendship with another nurse veteran named Loretta Ford. Now, let me do a brief introduction for you before we talk about your friendship when we come back. But Loretta Ford is actually, she was born in 1920, and she began her career as a nurse's aide at the age of 16. And she also worked at a hospital in New Jersey. All of these New Jersey connections. My husband grew up in New Jersey too, so I love that. But she entered the nursing program when she was 18 and received her diploma in 1941. And then she joined the visiting nurse service of New Brunswick. But soon after, much like your experience, Jean, her fiance was killed in World War II. And so she joined the Air Force and served her country for 3 years. After that war, she attended the University of Colorado on the GI Bill. And she started the pediatric nurse practitioner role. She turns 103 years old this morning. She's still the next month. She's still active in the profession, and we are going to talk about Jean's friendship with her when we come back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back on this Election Day. We are talking about Veterans Day and upcoming Nurse Practitioner Week, and we've been talking to my friend and colleague, Dr. Jean Artker from Florida. But before we get back to her remarkable story that she's been sharing with us, I just want to remind you, in all of the busyness that can be this time of year, don't forget about Operation Christmas Child, where you can go to SamaritansPurse.org/OCC and find out all about where to drop off your box, how to participate, and how to send God's love in a shoebox around the world. You can even have a code there where you can follow your box and see where it ends up. It's a great family project. Now, speaking of families, we have been talking to Jean as a military family, as a Gold Star wife. And if you missed the first part of the program, go back and listen to the podcast when it is published on AFR.net, and you will hear her remarkable story of meeting Captain Alan Artker and of his tragic plane crash and death in Germany in 1974. But 20 years later, she found out that he was really a hero in that death and saved a town from certain destruction with his heroic sacrifice, which is just amazing. And before the break, I gave you a brief introduction to another nurse veteran, Dr. Loretta Ford. Now, I told you, she's turning 103 years old next year, and she is still just as feisty as ever. Now, Jean's had a longtime friendship with her, and she has, let's start, Jean, with a really special event that you have been able to help arrange for Loretta this coming Veterans Day in Washington, D.C. So if you are a listener in or around the Washington, D.C. area, you may have an opportunity to see Dr. Ford at a very special event. Jean, tell us what is going on.
I sure will. Well, you know, I got to tell you, the first time I heard a note about Loretta Ford was 1984 when I was finishing my graduate degree as a nurse practitioner in Tampa, Florida. And I went to the Keystone Conference there. And that had been going on for several years. As you know, there weren't many nurse practitioner conferences like they are today. So it was a big thrill to go out to Keystone and watch this rock star walk down the hall and just emanate just the smartness, the wit, the humor of this lady, and the humbleness of what she does in her role as being the nurse founder, I call her, of the nurse practitioner role. And I want the reader, the listeners to know that she has a saying that we put out for her after she did a talk for us. And she says, your profession is nursing. Your role is nurse practitioner. And I hear a lot of people saying nurse practitioner profession. It's not a profession. The nursing is the profession, she will tell you. So that's just a point for everyone. She'll whop your ears if she hears that. So I met her in 1984, and I really didn't reconnect to her until I think it was need to talk to her. I just wrote her a note and said, I'd like to come up and visit you. Her husband, Bill, was still living at that time. And I'd go up and take lunch, and we'd have a chat, and Bill would join us. And I'd always take another nurse practitioner with me who had never met Dr. Ford. And she was so gracious to let us come to her home. So after a while, her daughter told me that they needed a ramp. So I started a little project, and I wrote all my buddies, and I said, I need some money to buy some building materials, and I have some guys that will help build a ramp. And so I called a lot of nurse practitioners from the Tampa Bay area. We went up to her home in Wildwood, Florida, and we made a 30-foot ramp. And that was the start of our philanthropy, and I'll tell you why. Because all the good things that we do in nursing, we forget to stop and honor our own. And so when Lee saw us out there working, doing her garden beds and fixing the house around the house for her, she came to me and she goes, Jean, and with a tear in her eyes, she said, you are my NP force. And there it starts. So we have the NP force movement is what I call it. And this is her term coined. And whenever we do something great for Loretta Ford or in her honor, we're going to use that tagline, the NP force is doing it for you. And just imagine the power if we got 355,000 NP force leaders out there. Well, if she turns 103, for the last 10 years, we've been doing birthday parties at her place. We've had golf cart during COVID drive-bys, honking our horns and making a lot of ruckus to wish her happy birthday. We've had golf scrambles in her honor to help her celebrate getting 1 year older. And she's always risen to the challenge. And she still has a mean golf swing if anybody ever wants to challenge her. So with this Veterans Day, we decided to, last June, I started writing everybody, and I said, I think Loretta Ford needs a Medal of Freedom or a Medal of Honor, something from the president. Well, the VA has taken up this charge, and they have gotten her invited to the White House Veterans Day breakfast, to be held this Saturday at 8 a.m. at the White House. Escorting her will be our friend and colleague who helped orchestrate this, Dr. Christopher Saslow, who was a past president of our Florida Nurse Practitioner Network. And he's going to escort her to the White House. And I think it's going to be an awesome honor. We're hoping the POTUS will be there. And then afterwards, they're going to travel. And this is where everyone can come, to the Arlington Cemetery Memorial Grounds at the amphitheater. Now, it's going to be highly restricted, so you got to get there early. The gates open at 8. Her appearance will, and when they start the amphitheater program, it'll be 11 a.m. So if you are in the D.C. area, Maryland area, Virginia area, and you want to meet Dr. Ford and get into the group photo, AAMP is sending their photographer and public relations person to come do that for us. And we're going to have a lot of folks that are there just to say, hello, Dr. Ford, and thank you. And let Dr. Ford know just how much we love her and respect her. And she's still sharp as a tack and witty and just amazing at 100, almost 3. December 28th, 2023, she'll be 103.
It is absolutely amazing. So if you missed that, there is the wreath laying ceremony at Arlington Cemetery starting this Saturday, starting at 11 a.m. And they will be honoring Dr. Loretta Ford, who, you know, we know about veterans and we appreciate everything that they've done. But there are not very many World War II veterans who are left, much less veterans who are nurses. And I think this is just such a special opportunity to pay tribute to the greatest generation and to a nurse who was extraordinarily courageous during World War II. As I said in her biography, tragically lost her fiance during that time, but went on to create the nurse practitioner role. And I can attest to Jean's testimony here that she is a feisty lady. So I was blessed to be able to attend her 102nd birthday party that Jean threw in Tampa last year. And it was quite remarkable because they had a museum collection of all of her World War II, just her cape, her hat, all of the memorabilia that was there. And you're expecting this 102-year-old lady to be wheeled in. She was not. She walked right in on her own two feet. And when I greeted her and said hello, she literally gave me a curtsy and a laugh. And she walked right into her own party. So now she is turning 103. Well, Jean, we just thank you so much. I just have one last question for you. Today, you're working at the Judeo-Christian Health Clinic in Tampa. You've served on their board of directors. You've served them for many decades. How does your faith inform your life and your practice? You are one of the most positive, encouraging, servant-hearted women I've ever met. How did you experience such terrible tragedy and escape bitterness and embrace joy?
I'd have to say my faith and that God leads me in whatever happens. I think it's been my fortune to have these experiences that I can share with other people to let them know that, yeah, bad things will happen, but you have to have the faith in order to get through it. Trust me, it was difficult times to deal with. But nursing kept me going. I focused on my nursing career, on my daughter, and just family is real important. And just keeping the faith ahead. You know, God gives us all that we can handle and doesn't ask for anything more. But you know what? Sometimes it feels like, well, enough. But, you know, I always find that, no, it's not enough. I have to do more. And I think that's what nursing can do, can learn from and can do, is to respect our history and honor the ones who have led the path ahead of us because they went through so many difficulties as well. So we can transverse that if we have the faith, if we have the understanding that there is a better thing waiting for us someday and that we need to all stick together. Nurses need to bond together and be that NP force.
I love it, Jean. Those are great words. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. We so appreciate you sharing Alan's beautiful story of sacrifice and your friendship with another nurse veteran and nurse legend, Loretta Ford. Thank you, Jean.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's end our program by talking a little bit about what does this all mean for the families? And, you know, I think it's really important in this age of digital connection and relational disconnection to really invest in the power of other people's experience and story and to really talk with them and to see what can we learn from this? What can we emulate from this? What are ways that we can serve our neighbors? And just hearing Jean's story of sacrifice and seeing her experience tragedy, but to turn that into purpose is so inspirational. And I know it had a really good conversation between me and my kids at home, sharing Jean's story with them. And so I encourage you, as Veterans Day approaches, to share those stories of sacrifice and courage because they all mean so much. And we only enjoy the freedom that we have today here in America because of the sacrifices that are made by veterans and their families. And that is so important. Now, in today's day of political discourse, let me tell you, kids are becoming more and more disgusted with politics. They honestly, a lot of kids don't want anything to do with it. And I think it's our fear, you know, that we want our kids to understand our values and to adopt them. And so then when we get fearful, we often get panicky and we can get to where we are lecturing kids and where we're telling them, remember this or this is important. But parents, this is the time where it's really important to listen. If we want to influence our kids' worldview, we really need to start by viewing the world as they see it. So some simple questions like, what do you think about politics? Or how do you feel about politics? May be instructive in telling you where your child is at. Now, even from a very young age, all the way up to when they are young adults and they become ready to vote, we have to begin preparing them for that civic engagement and civic responsibility. I see many kids in my practice when I do well child checkups and they turn 18, I will always ask if they've registered to vote. And I'll tell you, most of the time, they give me a blank stare and I don't know, and why would I do that? So talking to kids and equipping them is really important. That's why when they're younger, it's important to take them with you to vote. Are they going to love it? Probably not. But are they going to learn from it? Yes. So take them, explain to them how you're making the decisions that you're making. Share with them what information sources that you have. And it might even be fun for your family to have a sort of mock election. Look at what is on your ballot. You can usually find that by county. And have your own election in your family or give it to your child and say, what would you vote? Tell them, you do yours and I'll do mine and let's see what matches. That might be really encouraging to them. But one thing that we can all do for sure for civic engagement is to pray. Pray intentionally together with our family. In 1 Timothy 2, it gives us a clear command to pray for people who are in high positions. So even when your kids are really young, don't forget to pray with them about what's happening in your city, in your country, and in your world. If you're watching the news, watch a little bit and then translate it and then turn it off. Make sure that your kids aren't perceiving that as negative. And when they ask you about what's happening in the news, don't avoid those tricky subjects or try to lecture your way to influence their understanding, but explain it to them in a developmentally appropriate way that's answering the question that they're asking, and then invite your kids to pray about that issue. That is something powerful that they can do. When they feel like the world is dark and it is discouraging and they can feel fearful, you can empower them by reminding them that prayer matters and prayer changes things. And when they're feeling overwhelmed or discouraged or feeling like something is never going to change, they can pray about it and you can lead and pray with them. We can lead in the way that we talk with our friends, having civil discourse about things that we disagree with and then praying about those issues. I will see you tomorrow right here, same time, same channel, and have a great day. Don't forget to go out and vote.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.